Hello everyone! Thank you for joining us for The Law Awakens. My name is Joshua Gilliland. I'm one of the founding attorneys on The Legal Geeks. With us today is a newly minted attorney, Sylvia LaRosa. Congratulate her on passing the bar. Monty Cooper, who is an IP lawyer at ORIC.
And a geek. Yes. Self-proclaimed and proud and will defend it.
And our first celebrity panelist, Claudia Gray, who is an attorney and the author of Star Wars books, including
Bloodline,
Princess of Alderaan, Lost Stars. Uh-huh. Did I miss any?
No, there was a short story, but that's it. In a certain point of view, one of those. So, yes, and I haven't practiced law in 18 years, so I'm a little rusty. Please do not take any of this as advice for your own space.
So we are super excited that Claudia could join us. So let's dive into the legal issues in Star Wars, because the law is a lot like the Force. It flows through us, all around us, and holds civil society together. So let's begin with the first big discrimination issue that we see in A New Hope with, we don't serve your kind here. Because when we hear that, lawyers get angry and we start typing on our recording. And there's going to be some of that in Tennessee and Texas in the next couple weeks, but stay tuned. So, Sylvia, could you help us understand R2-D2 and C-3PO's civil rights issues at the cantina on Mos Eisley's?
Well, I mean, first we have to look at, are they persons? Like, are droids persons? Since you mentioned C-3PO, we can compare, like, C-3PO is more human than R2-D2. Like, you can say he has emotions, you know, he has a cognitive ability that's very human-like, so would he classify as a person? So across the United States, there's different case law that has made it illegal for bars and taverns to refuse to serve people based on race. Now, there's also a difference between states. Some states, like California, for example, say that it is we are free and equal. And, oh, you have it up there. Yep. There you go. It includes genetic information, whereas to other states, won't include genetic information as a basis for discrimination or a suspect class. So it comes down to, can we look at it? Now, you said R2-D2, but I love BB-8, so I'm going to use BB-8. So BB-8, like, first of all, I don't even understand what he says. Let's just start there, okay? But can he, I mean, based on his beeping and sound and tone, maybe he has emotion, you can tell. But C-3PO is very human-like. Like, we could probably put a case on and fight, like, he's human. He can think like a human. He has communication skills like a human. He can tell us what is right from wrong.
Sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's perspective, but okay.
He can tell us what's polite.
Yeah, there you go, there you go.
Got that.
There you go. Yeah. So, you know, you've got that. You got to classify and look at it from that aspect as well. So, I mean, I'm going to take it if anybody else wants to do it now.
So, at WonderCon, which was down in Anaheim, we actually did a mock trial with Magistrate Judge Stacey Beckerman, a U.S. attorney, a JAG officer, a civil rights attorney, and the trial counsel from eSurance, wading in to this issue. And it's posted on our podcast channel and our YouTube channel. It was lots of fun. But a funny thing happened after that mock trial. Denny's started their marketing campaign for Solo, promoting droids are welcome. And that filled me with joy because it made me feel like we were on the cutting edge of a civil rights issue. And I didn't think I would get to do one of those. And so one of the people who participated with us, she drives the Opportunity rover on Mars. So she's at NASA JPL. Her name's Carrie. And Carrie built her own R2-D2. And she, you know, we had her as the expert witness from the Mon Calamari Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And and she decided to test this droids are welcome sign and took her R2-D2 to Denny's, and they did serve him. So hats off to Denny's. Now, she posted that on Twitter and her Facebook. Denny's responded and was trying to get her and Lucasfilm to go to Denny's at the same time so they could film that. So I hope that happens. But it was a wonderful, wonderful issue for Solo. And so we have some blog posts on, I won't spoil Solo in case anyone hasn't seen it.
Thank you.
But we have some fun blog posts up for underground droid fighting, comparing it to dog fights. So check that out. And some other good things coming because, again, Solo had the most legal issues and of any of the Star Wars movies to blog about, so it was like a Christmas gift. So the only thing that Anakin Skywalker could hate more than sand is lava.
Yeah.
And now I saw Revenge of the Sith with my cousin who's an ER doctor. And at the end, when they're putting him back together, his reaction was, are they going to treat those burns? Could you sue those medical droids for malpractice? And this is funky because we have yet to see a biological doctor in any of the Star Wars properties. They're always a droid. And that's just weird. So this raises an interesting question. What do you do? Now, when you normally sue for malpractice, you get into issues of what's the standard in that community. Well, if all the droids are programmed the same to, like, not treat burns or to let women that just had a baby die.
She's sad. We can't do anything. She's sad.
Because, you know, women die of sadness all the time in this country.
Too soon.
Okay. Sorry. What do we do here? Well, if they're not programmed to treat the burns, that means this is a product defect case and not medical malpractice. So to sue the manufacturer saying, you didn't program to treat burns or to keep pregnant ladies from dying of sadness.
Well, you would also, I mean, if you're not giving droids rights, you can't sue them for medical malpractice. They can't both not have personhood and be liable individually.
So that's why you go after the owners, like a dog.
The deep pocket.
So what if the droids that were working on Anakin Skywalker were instructed not to treat the burns to keep him in agony so that the Emperor can maintain control over him?
That's been a theory floated before that Palpatine purposely did that in order to keep him angry and hurt, and so that way he would constantly be, you know, upset. If you've read the Darth Vader comic, both editions, or that end in Rogue One, he clearly has some anger issues. So, mission accomplished. Yes, sir.
The Emperor's medbots, aren't they technically military, and you can't sue military doctors for malpractice?
I think
are they
good? Our JAG officer isn't here. His wife just had the baby on Monday, and she's healthy.
She's not sad.
She's not sad. So I will ask them because they're both JAGs. And we'll find out, and so stay tuned. Connect with us afterwards.
I always took the position that it was like these droids had just seen this guy destroy the entire Jedi Force, and it was like, yeah, how does this feel?
So, which is why it's a lot of fun that what happens again in Solo, that just warms my heart. But there'll be another year. So let's talk about employee safety in Jabba the Hutt's palace. And so Claudia is going to help us with a lot of this, and I'll help with some setup, and then...
Yeah, I mean, at Jabba's palace, employee safety, guest safety, anybody's safety is really not very high on the list here. But dancing girls appear to be at particular risk. Lords of the Hold, people can accidentally walk into must be guarded by a railing which was absent. And wouldn't it be great to see, like, the slug lord that controls all crime in the universe, like, be taken out, like, oh, this is anti-regulation. Sorry, we gotta close this up.
Well, John does have a duty, doesn't he?
Because, again, well...
I mean, there is a cover on it, but it's a cover that goes... Which is not super helpful.
Yeah, because it's a murder pit. And, so when Ula upsets Jabba, who is enslaved, so we won't touch that issue right away, but that's bad. No, she's up. He's upset with her performance. There's no employee improvement plan. There's no like HR process. It's summary execution. We don't like businesses operating that way.
The Glassdoor reviews must be terrible.
Oh God! Yeah. If they live long enough, yeah. Then the Gamorrean guard, you know, who's just doing his job when Luke pulls a blaster.
But you could argue as bodyguards in a situation where they realize violence may break out that they have actually accepted this.
It's assumption of risk. Yeah.
They're wearing armor.
They are.
But shoulders.
But it's a look. Yeah. You want to protect the shoulder.
You got the horns.
The heart, no. Shoulder.
But, you know, he does. He falls into the murder pit with the Rancor.
Oh.
And, you know, that raises an interesting question with the Rancor because, you know, they're wild animals imported from Tatooine. They're purposely put into, you know, the murder pit. And the purpose of that is that they will, you know, if somebody falls in, they'll be the Rancor snack. And we have cases from Florida and Georgia where people know there are alligators in their backyard. they have shark attack cases and the alligator cases. And you have to warn somebody in your backyard. It's like, hey, there's an alligator back there, and I know it's dangerous because it's a wild animal. He probably tasted like bacon. So let's pivot to independent contractors and like that.
Yes, the Sarlacc pit. Yeah, you don't have nearly responsibility toward your independent contractors. And actually, I guess you could argue Boba Fett was not required by his employee to be there. He just wanted to watch. You know, that ended poorly.
Yeah. That's true. It's contract.
Yeah, I mean, a friend of mine, keep going with this. Yeah. Yeah, he had to have like some reasonably safe work environment, but what does that even mean in the context of this industry? Java industry, whatever that, because it would be different depending on the work that you're doing. It ought to be. I think really it's cool, right?
Why is everybody assuming this is an employment situation? When I see that thing, I think more of it being like a baseball game, and everybody's there to watch. And, you know, it's the same risk you take about getting a foul ball, except in this case you get eaten by a large worm in the desert.
Yeah, for Boba Fett, I think that is true. I mean, a Gamorrean guard, maybe not. Maybe he's got to be there. I don't know.
And the other thing with Boba Fett, you know, he chooses to take on Luke Skywalker with a lightsaber. He should remember from his childhood watching his clone dad beheaded. So he clearly knew the risk of what he was doing, and for him to get taken out by a blind guy, he assumed that risk.
Yeah.
So...
Oh, I was going to say one other thing.
Oh, go on.
Because in terms of workplace safety and the Death Star and the Empire and the First Order, you know, everybody knows about Chekhov's gun, the dramatic principle. If you have a gun in the first act, it must go off by the end. And a friend of mine calls the really long walkways over infinite depth in Star Wars that have no railings Chekhov's OSHA violation. It's like, yeah, this is not good. The only person who's made it across one of those was Obi-Wan Kenobi. Congrats to him. But any other time you see that, you're like, ooh, gravity is going to be a harsh mistress today. But yeah, and the thing is, the Empire at least is theoretically trying to keep these people alive. And this is even true for areas that you would think people with some status, not cannon fodder, are in. So exactly what they are thinking there, I do not know. There's an expose waiting to be written.
No handrails and polished floors.
Would that expose be written by one of the guys who has to stand and literally at a control panel where the open death laser is fired?
Yeah, it's like, just duck the laser, buddy. Just duck that thing.
I'm sure you won't get cancer. We'll be fine. Yeah.
The military has a tendency to buff and polish floors as something for their lowest enlisted ranking personnel to be tormented, and we see that in the Death Star. Mm-hmm. So how does that go against, you know, safety regulations versus maintaining good order and discipline among the stormtroopers?
they clearly don't care about people. that's how.
Mouse droids are a tripping hazard.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, mouse droids are a tripping hazard. Well done. There's an article. So, Monty, let's talk about some executive power issues with the Emperor dissolving the Senate.
Oh, I am so glad I got this topic. So, as we all know, the Emperor dissolves a republic. The republic, by definition, going back to Roman times, is the government invested in the people. It is not necessarily a democracy. We were the first country in the world to try and form the two of them simultaneously. So the question is, let's assume that this is a forward-looking empire, and it has a constitution in place similar to the United States Constitution. And in the U.S. Constitution, we have a provision, Article 4, Section 4, called the Republican Form of Government Clause. You may have heard it. It's been in the news lately. It says that the United States shall guarantee to each of the states a Republican form of government. And it has actually been litigated. Long ago, in 1840, there was a rebellion in the United States called the Door Rebellion. You don't read about it too often in high school because it didn't involve anyone dying. It was a very boring rebellion, and it had nothing to do with Star Wars. instead, it had to do with Rhode Island, which is another reason it has nothing to do with Star Wars. Rhode Island in 1840 was based on a 1660 charter. That was effectively its state constitution, which invested in the people the right that only the white landed landowners who had property of $146 at the time, which is similar to San Francisco housing costs at the present time, were the only people who could actually vote in elections. And in the 1840, as you know, there was a large swath of immigration, particularly the Irish, moving into the into New England. And this made it so that the cities were grossly underrepresented in the state capital. A guy named Door decided to take guns up and was ready to start an early civil war. It was obviated when the state senate for the first time created a compromise charter that said that they would allow anybody who was born in the United States to vote whether they were a landowner or not. However, if you were an immigrant, i.e. Irish, and you were born in Ireland, you still had to abide by the $146, own land and the like. So it almost went to a war, but the backers of the rebellion backed off, and then the leaders were arrested, and they took their case to the Supreme Court. It's a long-winded way to say when it got to the Supreme Court, the answer to can the emperor dissolve the Senate was the same as asking, what does it mean to be a republican form of government, and shouldn't the states do something about it? This is one of the rarest doctrines in constitutional law. It's called the political question doctrine. This is the first instance of it ever being employed, and what that means is it's a rare case where the Supreme Court says, yes, this is in the Constitution. Yes, we have the last say in what the Constitution means. We will not tell you what it means. This is for Congress to tell you what it means. There is no way the Supreme Court will ever say what is a Republican form of government and what does it mean to enforce it. There are two other very famous examples that have been hinted as to what the political question doctrine applies to, and this is why it's topical. Pardoning and impeachment.
What I think is interesting is you've got the old Senate, the Galactic Senate, but then you have the Imperial Senate, which is what it has come by episode 4. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing the Imperial Senate was maybe not as based in a Republican government. Does everyone agree?
Well, yeah. Except that in A New Hope, they say the Emperor had even dissolved it.
That's my point, is that it would be dissolvable in a way that traditionally a Republic Senate should not be.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I'm the ultimate Sith Lord. I can do what I want to the Senate because there are no more Jedis.
Yeah, so, or I could just...
Josh and I had a debate about this. Let's assume this happened in the U.S. What would be the response? My view would be call in the military. His view is take it to the people and up the courts, and they're both viable. But you can understand if this crisis actually happens even in our own constitutional government, it's close to what happened in 1860.
Yeah, that's not a good model. So, let's keep going forward. So let's talk about everyone's favorite Grand Moff, who takes the position that in order to get Leia to talk, he's going to blow up her planet. And after she does talk and gives a false location, he blows up the planet anyway. And there's an issue of, like, was that of military necessity to do? Because it's a lot like saying the only way to stop the rebels is to take out their families. And if that causes you pause and you think, like, I hope no elected leader ever says that. Yeah. So what does it mean for military necessity? Well, those are the measures that are reasonable and proportionate to secure the prompt submission of the enemy. So blowing up an entire planet is a bad plan. And if you think, like, hey, is that a war crime? You were absolutely right. We don't do that. Now, Tarkin has the doctrine of fear. So yeah, when you think about my doctrine is predicated upon killing people in order to make sure everyone falls in line, of course this is his plan and it would make sense to him, but under the Geneva Convention, nations are prohibited from committing murder and persons taking no active part in the hostilities. And some people might go like, hey, what about like bombing Germany and firebombing Tokyo? There's something called, if they do it first, we can do it too. And so you have the Germans doing the blitz on England, V2 rockets coming in, so targeting civilian populations in Germany was fair game. And with Japan, ask China. 25 yeah. million people mostly beheaded, and also the use of microwave weapons to test it out on whether or not they could kill them. And so that's why we had targeted civilians in Japan in order to break them. So generally it's a bad plan. This is a lot like saying, like, hey, I'll use a Trident nuclear missile to take out ISIS. And if anyone said that, it'd be horrifying if they were elected.
Be a little overkill.
Yeah, just a little overkill, because the neighbors aren't going to like that. Correct. And the nuclear winter over that part of the world also is kind of bad. So let's talk about some war crimes.
Yeah.
So there's this wonderful case of what not to do. So in the beginning of The Force Awakens, when we're on Jakku, Kylo Ren says, kill them all, when Captain Phasma asks, what do we do about the prisoners? Kill them all is the exact thing that William Calley said at My Lai before the U.S. soldiers slaughtered the civilians of that village. There was a total of one soldier that threw down his weapon and said, screw this. And there was one helicopter crew that came in and said, time out. And the pilot ordered his crew to turn their weapons on the Americans to keep them from killing those innocent people that we were there to protect. So Kylo Ren falls into the exact issue of a war criminal. So Finn was right to throw down his weapon. Now, some people say, like, well, what about following orders? If the order's illegal, you don't have to follow it. So when somebody's surrendered, you don't get to murder them. And that's the big problem with the First Order and also the Empire, that they give them no quarter. We're finishing this. We're committing genocide today. That's why they're super evil. And when you think about what they do, and it's like, they are the bad guys. I'm like, they, you know, embody war crimes. Now, I listened to a podcast recently where somebody said, like, Finn's a coward. I say, screw you. The fact that it takes courage to say no. When we, whether it's the Zimbardo prison experiments or the Nuremberg electrocution experiments that were done in the 60s, when somebody in authority says, turn it up all the way, too many people say, okay, and will fry somebody. The one guy at My Lai who said no. Finn was the one guy who refused to pull the trigger. The rest of them are war criminals. So, not a coward. He's a good guy. And I will fight for that and argue it. Yes, sir.
Last slide, it talked about an active part in hostilities, mm-hmm. in the Geneva Convention. Is that specifically related to the bearing the arms and I am fighting you? And not necessarily, I've got this vest on with explosives and I have my finger on the trigger, but you don't see it. I
mean, that's different. You know, it's more like, you know, shooting lifeboats with people in it.
Sure.
But if you know somebody is wearing a bomb, that's a different scenario.
Okay.
But yeah, it's.
So it's not in the act. It's any reasonable potentiality.
Yeah, it's, we don't want to. We don't want our people strifing civilians.
Right. Strafing.
Mm-hmm. Strafing.
It would cause strife.
Yeah. We don't want that either.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that I was following orders. It must be a legal order. And you can't order someone to do an illegal order. So if the order is go commit a war crime, the answer is no. Mm-hmm. We have cases from the 50s that I can go back to World War II where a superior officer ordered a lower ranking army guy to shoot a prisoner who was lying face down on the ground in the back of the head. No, illegal order. It's illegal on its face. Don't do that. And so you don't get to claim I was following orders when the order was to commit murder. So let's talk about the insanity defense.
Well, can you? I mean, I'm going to defend Kylo for personal reasons. But I mean, so there is case law that says if you're under the influence of certain drugs, for example, as long as the drug inhibited your cognitive ability to tell the right from wrong, or gave you like a delusional compulsion that you acted without actual intent, you know, you just, the drug took over your brain per se for lay terms purposes, can you claim an insanity defense? So there is case law that says you can. So can Kylo Ren, for example, claim insanity defense? And so I was actually having this debate with my friend earlier, and I was like, yeah, but maybe it's just my connection with his eyes during the film, but I felt that maybe he had some sense of, wait a minute, this is kind of wrong. Wait a minute, this is kind of right, or I kind of don't want to, but I kind of know I have to, kind of thing. So it's like, I'm not convinced he can claim insanity defense, but then again, the law applies to the moment you committed the offense. So it's not like, you know, big picture, it's at the moment you killed so-and-so. So at the moment Kylo committed that offense, was he so delusional that it took over his intent? Or, so it can be either or, it doesn't have to be both, or did it take over the dark order, the dark side, take over his mind so much that he couldn't tell what was right from wrong?
Do you think he could argue basically brainwashing? I mean, it didn't work out great for Patty Hearst, but it was a decent attempt at a defense.
The Sirhan case that went up, Judge Breyer said no. Mm-hmm. But he also pointed out that you're arguing about brainwashing from something in 1968, right before you killed Bobby Kennedy, rot in prison. But so it raises a fun issue of, is the dark side an addiction? Or is it a lifestyle choice?
Here's a question I'll ask you right back. Let's assume, just for the sake of argument here, that some of you think dark side could be an addiction. Doesn't that mean the good side is as well? If you're indoctrinated by the dark side, you're also indoctrinated by the opposite.
It is indoctrination. Yeah, there's
a difference between indoctrination and life choices. So let's take a look at some choices. So let's break down some of the abridged crimes of Darth Vader.
I have abridged. I like that. It fits on one slide that way.
Yes. Murders Tusken Raiders after his mommy dies, and because he's upset. Then murders a room full of children before installing a dictatorship to save his secret wife. There's a lot more murder. There's spousal abuse. Then there's genocide. And then there's a lot more murder and more murder after that. And then he goes back to Tatooine after A New Hope in the comics. He has some free time, so he kills Tusken Raiders for entertainment.
Okay.
So, did the dark side destroy his ability to distinguish between right and wrong over like 20 years? Hmm. Or did it make him act under a delusional compulsion? I'm going to say all of that is our choices. Mm-hmm. Now, there's an issue with the first one that we can now double back to.
I was going
to
say that. Yeah, the first one, I would claim provocation. Oh, no.
So when we talk about the first one.
I would be with you on that one.
Yeah.
The first one, there's an issue of killing the Tusken Raiders. Is that a hate crime, or does the insanity defense apply?
Oh, so great. So he has 25 life in sentences instead of 26.
Yeah. But this is the first one. This is the first one. And the issue here is when you kill people because of their race, religion, that's a hate crime. Mm-hmm. And so he tells Padme, I killed all of them. Even the women and children. They're animals.
Yeah.
Could we argue the insanity defense? Now, under the stress of the moment, his freak out of his mom dying, I think there's a good argument that the insanity defense does apply. I also think that there's an argument it doesn't apply, because it sounds like pent-up racism. And then you have Padme turn into an accomplice after the fact. She should not have rewarded that conduct with marriage. The first response should have been a phone call to Obi-Wan Kenobi to go, dude, he killed a village. Because that would have stopped everything else from happening. But for her turning into an accomplice, which is then a great evidence issue after they get married, whether she could testify against them.
So maybe that's why he married her. Maybe that's why he married her.
Privilege.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the confession wasn't made during the marriage.
Exactly.
It's not subject.
So, but could she still be made to testify against them? So, your thoughts?
Oh, no, I have none. I'm already satisfied.
Okay. Now, what about the younglings?
Oh, that is just out of hand.
Pure murder.
No defense on that one. Okay, no defense.
About the indoctrination thing.
Uh-huh.
Because we were talking about that earlier. Are not all Jedi indoctrinated, so they have that temporary insanity, not a lifestyle choice, it's...
Addiction.
Yeah, I think it's a lifestyle choice. Because
we do see people leave the Jedi Order.
Yeah. Ahsoka. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, she didn't leave. She was forced out.
She
just
left.
Like a cult. She got kicked out.
She got kicked out, but then they let her back in.
No, they were going to let her back in. She's like, no, this is a cult.
I think the stealing children thing that the Jedi do.
Yeah.
They're allowed to go home and see mom and dad up until their 10th birthday and then no more.
That's these new parents that consent to that, yes or no?
Is it mandatory?
I mean, you know, or is it like some medieval thing where people are like, yep, second kid goes to the church. monastery
Even if the parents consent, if it's actually against the child's interest, that doesn't obviate their actions even under state law.
Yeah, but I guess you could argue that being a Jedi Knight at least has...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's totally cool. Mom, Dad, I'm going.
Wouldn't the analogy be Vader and Kylo Ren are more analogous to Manson family members, whereas the standard Jedi are more analogous to priests?
I think so. I think so. And that's a great analogy. So let's talk about... So, how we have watched the Clone Wars... Good.
All right.
Fives and what happens to him in the four-part episode that gets into the unknown, fugitive, conspiracy, raises wonderful issues about Order 66 and actually gives us a lot legally that we could argue whether or not when the Emperor issues that order, whether or not they could argue the insanity defense. So finding out from the Clone Wars episodes that there was a biochip added to all clones while they were embryos would be a foreign object. And arguably, that would be something that we could prove was a disease, a mental condition, so they didn't know right from wrong. And then when we get to Rebels, which was also excellent, when we get to the Lost Commanders episode, Wolf is clearly suffering from this because he freaks out when he sees Ezra and Kanan saying he's a Jedi, and his call to the Empire, where they note a record of calls of delusional distress. He clearly had problems from that biochip in his brain. I think there's a lot to be said that I would gladly defend Fives and, or well, Fives died, but everyone who survived, Wolf and company, that they were insane when it came to Order 66, and they were unable to control themselves. Others?
I don't know. I mean, would it be insane or just like lacking free will?
Lacking free will or unable to know right from wrong.
Mm-hmm. On that definition of insanity.
Yeah. So, glad to defend any of them. Most specifically Rex.
Oh my gosh.
So there's a wonderful topic in the law called tracing in order to determine property rights. So we're going to hit light speed and do this fast. So let's trace the property ownership of Anakin's second lightsaber, because he loses the first one at the Battle of Geonosis. After he loses his limbs, Obi-Wan takes the lightsaber on Mustafar. He gives it to Luke 19 years later, and Luke loses it with his hand on Bespin. So, did Obi-Wan steal Anakin's lightsaber? I'm going to go with no, because there's spoils of war theory. Also, law enforcement is not going to leave a gun from a gang fight.
Well, that's your gun, sir.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to that while I get these handcuffs. Yeah.
Do you have a family member I could give this to? No! No, we don't do that. Adverse possession is another argument that could happen because he has it for 19 years. I think there's a lot of arguments that it was a valid gift to Luke.
And and also, I mean, Obi-Wan considers Anakin Skywalker dead,
yep.
Which means Luke would therefore be the person to inherit it.
Yep. And I also want to find out, when did Obi-Wan learn Vader was alive? Because we learn in Rebels that Obi-Wan and Yoda were communicating to each other through the Force, but and also from a certain point of view, he would go into the cantina. So was he getting the news? When did he learn about Darth Vader? So that's a question I would love to hear answered. So we then have it lost on Bespin, and let's get through the facts and then pepper us with questions. So it's lost in Bespin when Luke loses his hand. There's an argument that it's lost because he no longer possesses control of it through an accident, in this case losing his right hand. Argument for abandonment because he doesn't go back to find it, but like, would you? somehow it ends up with
back.
Yeah. We'll find out in how Maz gets it sometime. I mean, I don't know if you're working on that, but you know, we'll find out. We then, Maz is arguably the owner of it. She tries giving it to Rey as a gift. Rey refuses it. She then gives it to Finn, arguably either as a gift or as a bay leaf for Finn to give it to Rey when she's ready for it. So I think there's a great argument, despite the fact that the box now says Rey's lightsaber, that it was hers as a valid gift.
I have an entirely different answer.
Okay, hit me.
I believe lightsabers, because they are accorded by the Jedi Academy to the candidates upon their graduation, are an article of the state, much like an MK weapon is to the government, and therefore it always belonged to the Republic, and therefore it belongs to Yoda.
From a Clone Wars episode where David Tennant was one of the voices of the droid, they go off to a planet and they find a kyber crystal that picks them, and then they make their first lightsaber. So if the kyber crystal is somewhat alive, that they all sing their own song, arguably, I would say that connection would then trump the state issue, because the lightsaber pretty much chose Rey over Kylo.
That sounds like Hogwarts, if you ask me.
Of course. It's bringing back the magic. Yes.
Oh, but if if you have the Republic, whose successor state is the Galactic Empire, whose successor state is the New Republic, would not Leia be the correct owner? Or does the New Republic be the correct owner?
It's a personal property.
Rather than owned by the government.
That's my take on it. We're going to have a different opinion on it, and that's okay with lawyers. Your hand is up, sir.
So, yeah, you say Obi-Wan taking the lightsaber was kind of like law enforcement cleaning up after a gunfight. But surely at that point, the Jedi are no longer the legitimate law enforcement of the galaxy, because the Empire is now the ruling power of the galaxy. So Obi-Wan's a rogue cop.
The dark side is strong in this one.
I think you can legitimately say things were in flux. Yeah.
You also had the issue that the Jedi and Sith are at war, and that what the Emperor did was a coup d'etat of the Republic based upon a fraudulent war with an enemy that didn't exist, and that since his rule is predicated upon a lie...
From a certain point of view.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that... No. So let's talk about forcing confessions. Because this is not how you get the dad of the year card.
So there actually is case law in Georgia that talks about truth serum. I was like surprised to know that. I was like, oh, this is a real thing. So that the courts won't allow any expert testimony regarding truth serum until there's proof that the truth serum actually compels a person to tell the truth. Now, this is equivalent to, I think, coerced confessions nowadays by law enforcement or legal district attorneys or whatever. Coerced confessions, which are obviously, you know, against your Miranda rights and Fourth Amendment issues. So this is equivalent to that, in my opinion. But at the same time, there is no Constitution in Star Wars. There is no civil liberties, civil rights. So
it's what Robert De Niro did in Meet the Parents.
But that's not a government actor acting on, you know.
Yeah, but it's dad.
That's another civil rights violation. Yeah, absolutely. Battery. Yes.
What if the use of that truth serum, not in Darth Vader's case, obviously, is utilized to save a great number of lives?
There's a reason why we don't have a lot of cases with this, because it's repugnant to justice to drug people. So we don't do it because it's sick and wrong, and it's stuff that, the Soviet Union did, mm-hmm. and the Nazis did, and we're not in that camp.
Okay.
Definitely not a Fourth Amendment, no.
No. No. Okay. No. No. We got off that bus. So let's talk about Cassian Andor murdering those two dudes. And so I speak of his informant, where he does his best Lenny impression. Or tell me about the rabbits.
Yeah.
And then one of Saw Gerrera's men in order to make sure Jen is not killed by an IED. So let's talk about that, on what that would mean.
I mean, I thought about Jen. That was defense of others.
Yep.
If you reasonably believe that individual's life is in danger, you can, you know, kill for their defense. So that's legitimate. Like, that was seriously in defense of Jen's life. So he has a defense for that one. I just don't know about the first one. That was probably
First one's totally murder.
Yeah.
And this is where we transcend law and just get into geopolitics and spycraft. It was the right call. Because that guy would have talked and there was no way to get him out. That's why rebellion leaders, you know, carried those suicide pills with them. I'm sure that's how Radis went out. So,
that's a gang mentality, though.
It's
gang members kill to shut people from talking too.
I'm not saying it's a good thing, but when fighting the Empire, that was the only way to save the rebellion. It's wrong. It's creepy. It's why he's riddled with guilt. It's why he doesn't take a shot at Galen Erso, and it's why he goes along with Jin, because he's really upset at everything that he's done, because that's probably not the first time he did that. So. I love Cassian because he's a very complex character and was haunted by his past. And too bad we don't get to see more of them.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Greedo never shot.
Let's talk about missing at point-blank range. So,
yeah, I've seen it.
So let's take a look at the original footage.
The only footage.
Yeah, but this time I've got the money. I don't have it with me. Tell Jabba. Even I get bored at sometimes. You think I had a choice? Over my dead body. Yes, I bet you have. Sorry about the mess.
language.
So this analysis is my crowning achievement as an attorney. So I'm not going to get appointed to the Supreme Court, but the fact that Vulture reprinted my article on this and it's been shared tens of thousands of times, I won. So I'm really happy about that. But this is classic self-defense analysis, which is very fact-specific. And so you have to look at the totality of the circumstances and the reasonable belief of the defendant. So California is a stand-your-ground state, and it's been so since the beginning. And so that's not shocking, and it basically means that you don't have to retreat. And in Hahn's case, he had no place to go. He's in a booth with a gun pointed at him. It's not like I'm going to duck and cover, because we know that doesn't work in nuclear attacks. And so he had a reasonable belief that this guy has a gun at me. Look at what he's saying, the context of what he's saying, and the fact they're in Mos Eisley's, you know, this hive of villainy and scum, that it's very reasonable for him to think, like, he's going to shoot me. So he made the right call based upon the totality of the circumstances. And I'll do an article about Hahn for shooting first for Solo, because he's right there as well, but for different reasons. So I say Hahn was right. Others, Kate?
You know. No, I would agree. I mean, the conversation originally begins suggesting, you know, like, oh, eventually he'll take your ship, he may do this. So it's suggesting something beyond this, but then Greedo, the last two statements, make it clear that, like, yes, he is ready to actually go to deadly force. Now, if it had been earlier in the conversation, it's just like, oh, you know, you got boarded. Like, at that point, no.
No. It's...
I'm going to play devil's advocate. No. I'm going to say no. If I had this evidence, if I was in court and I had that clip and that evidence, he does not look scared for his life. He looks calm and cool as a cucumber. So, I mean, are you really going to... I mean, why shoot if you were just chilling, like, oh, okay, sorry.
look, we know you like Kylo Ren's magnificent hair, but that...
Well, that triggered some people, sorry.
See, many people think of Han Solo as their Patronus.
I'm on your side.
So, the fact he looks... He's a card player. He knows how to handle this, and you can still have a subjective belief that this dude's going to shoot me and not cower in fear.
But he had time. Like, there were other people around at the bar, there were other people he could have called for help for. He was in a public place, not cornered in. This is devil's advocate. It's what I do for a living, okay? I'm just saying.
I just say the people at that bar, like, they get shot.
That's
true. It's just like, whatever, somebody got shot. I love where the band just picks up again, like,
but it has to be reasonable. How reasonable is it when there are people standing around you? He wasn't freaking out.
In danger.
Panda Boba just had his arm cut off like 3 minutes earlier, and everyone's still cool. So they know this is a rough part of town.
I actually might.
It's a tough bar.
Yeah.
Wouldn't Greedo's status as a bounty hunter give him, isn't it analogous to... Maybe not a police officer. Like, if a police officer goes to someone who is a wanted felon,
is he like a bail bondsman?
You know, or a bail bondsman.
But no, he's more like he's more like a mob thug, as opposed, you know, that's collecting for a loan shark, which that's still not okay. It's one thing if it's a bail bondsman, like that's in a slightly different scenario, but the use of I'm threatening to kill you now changes the dynamic.
But if we assume that Jabba is sort of the government of Tatooine,
sort of,
doesn't that then, you know, that in essence, Jabba is whatever law there exists in Mos Eisley, and therefore he's working on behest of.
Shows the bars in Mos Eisley are every bit as OSHA risk as Jabba's own bars.
It's like the Wild West rules by the
Now I'm trying to imagine like the Star Wars version of the Applebee's, where we're like, no, everybody comes out of here alive. We have the little gun dark back ribs. It's all good.
Doesn't it count as because it looked to me that as soon as Han saw Greedo, he was planning to shoot him. He got that calm, clunky. He's
He unsnapped his gun way earlier in the conversation.
I want you in my jury.
So after he was forced, he tried talking his way out first before getting forced to sit down at gunpoint. So a gun has been pointed at him the entire conversation. That's a key fact that shows if Guido hadn't had the gun out, yes. But the blaster's out the entire time.
Yeah, for the minute a gun gets pulled on you, you can have reasonable fear of your life.
And Khan is you know, very surreptitiously unsnapping his holster there, and I would argue that, you know, his whole totally relaxed act is you know,
just that
preventing Greedo from glancing down and noticing that his hand is
like I said, I did it for
getting
fun.
Ready.
It's just for fun.
Hey, look, you might have a reckless endangerment. What if Han had missed?
That's true. True, too. I could have a court on my hands.
But that would mean missing at point blank range. Who does that?
Have you seen the stormtroopers?
Yeah.
So, Rebels actually hit that nicely with the stormtroopers because, with the testing they go through, those who were really proficient, who might be sensitive to the Force, were eliminated. So it's a way to screen out Force-sensitive people who could be a problem later.
Yeah, I get to write Leia as the greatest shot in the universe because in Star Wars she's the only person who routinely hits what she's shooting at. Like, that's it. It's like, oh my god, she's like Annie Oakley, you know, or the world's greatest sniper because every once in a while she hits one, you know.
So I told a couple friends that you were going to join us, and they texted questions.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right.
So this is from a JAG officer.
Oh, God.
If you were going to write a Star Wars legal thriller or drama, what characters would you focus on?
Ooh. That's a good question.
That is really interesting.
You gave her a topic to write.
The first thing that's coming to mind, and I don't know that this would be my final answer, but I would actually be interested in going back to like a pre- Phantom Menace period and actually have something with like Jedi. Was there wrongdoing within the Jedi Order? Can there be liability for that? Is that government? Is that not government? And sometimes the question of whether somebody is or isn't a government actor is foggier than you would think. I live in New Orleans and I practiced there, and we had a case about liability for something a police officer did while guarding a Mardi Gras parade.
Oh.
And there was literally no distinction. Like, you did not know whether he was there as a police officer of the city or whether he was basically assigned by the crew that had thrown the parade. It was a big issue. And that's a big diversion. But, I mean, like, there could be a question about are the Jedi asking, like, acting on behalf of the state in everything that they do? Just in some things that they do? That would be interesting to me, and I think it would let you get into questions about, like, how do people view the Jedi in maybe a later area where they're getting a little more vulnerable? And I'm going to shut up now because I could talk a lot.
So his other... his offer, since he is a JAG officer and they just had a baby on Monday. If you need a military advisor, he's good for 2 or 3 hours a day while the baby's napping.
Yeah, if I run into legal trouble, I'm also going to be like, hey.
Yep, we'll help too.
Yeah, thanks.
The other one, this comes from the host of Beltway Banthas.
Okay.
And they want to know, what has it been like to be the premier shaper of the galaxy's political landscape?
I don't think I have been. I got to touch on politics a lot in Bloodline, but I was actually given like a little two-paragraph thing that was the state of politics that actually Rian Johnson had worked out. So I just sort of got to flesh that out some. It was fun to do, though, to actually like do the politics and hopefully make it fun instead of, you know, kind of, this is not as interesting as I would hope it would be.
So, yeah. I know a judge, political consultants, and others who love what you did in Bloodlines a lot.
All right.
So,
well, thank them for me.
We'll do.
That's fine.
Okay, cool. Anything else?
Question.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, I've said a few things already.
Oh, well, sorry. I'll just quick one then. What is the status, in your expert opinion, in the sliding scale of well-regulated militia prior to the attack of Coruscant of the Republic fleet, the resistance, and the Order?
You mean
Hosnian
Prime?
First Order. Those three.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought it was the Capital World.
Okay.
It seems like one is clearly the military, is it militia? It's a secular militia. The last two are ideologically driven. So
the resistance is definitely illegal at the time that she founds it, and she knows this, and they do talk about that. It's like, hey, we have all these weapons and we don't really have an excuse for it, and it's really like, just put them over there for now. So yeah, it is illegal at that time. Now, from the moment that the First Order rises up and eliminates the New Republic, you know, then I think you can argue that they're a resistance movement in the true sense. But before that, they're basically a treasonous cell. Mm-hmm. You know, the treason just happens to be the right thing to do.
They do seem to be well regulated, and they do seem to be a militia.
Yeah, and it's definitely being run like a military, not just, let's get some guns and shoot.
It's not all that different than the American militia at the time of the Revolution. We were actually the treasonous ones at the with respect to the crown, but understandably, we don't look at ourselves that way these days.
We're a country now.
I had an idea during the discussion of the dark side and the
insanity
defense, and I am very reluctant to contribute in any way to the stigma against mental illness. However, I wonder if it might be taken into account that Anakin Skywalker has been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, and whether his history of mental illness, how that relates to his susceptibility to the dark side, whether the dark side itself could be considered a mental illness or a symptom of mental illness.
You could certainly make an argument, say that his slide to the dark side, you could say, well, there are environmental factors that may have led to that. That would make it seem much more excusable than, say, somebody like Count Dooku.
Right.
Who is in a position of authority and ease, and, he has no boundaries on him like this, whereas Anakin is somebody who had an abnormal childhood, even by Jedi.
Palpatine from such an early age.
Yeah, so I don't know if you'd win with that, but you could certainly argue it, and also wish that Dooku has no excuse.
I have a hard time. Yeah, I have a hard time with it for a simple reason. He killed kids, and that's usually a sign of sociopathy.
Yeah.
With not borderline, it's over the border.
He wipes out families. Yeah. A couple years later, kills a room full of kids.
Yeah.
You're done.
Sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
So someone on the internet recently posited that with the stormtroopers being compared to the military, what if, similarly to what the military does, they check to see if the stormtroopers have fired their weapons? So somebody had a thought that what if the stormtroopers were purposely missing in order to not be punished and therefore brainwashed by the First Order? So my question was, would you still be able to prosecute the stormtroopers for war crimes via the illegal order thing if they purposely disobeyed? Made it seem like they were following orders but were purposely...
It would be tough for them to prove it.
Yeah.
It would be exonerating circumstances.
Yeah.
If they were able to establish that they, in fact, were not trying to follow the order, and doing so in a way that would also protect their own lives, I think even in a military court would take that into account.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that is known to happen.
Okay. Great question. That's worthy of an article. Great question. Anything else? And then we're done.
What would it take for Order 66, whether or not it's moral, to be legal? What would the Jedi have to do to be like a Branch Davidian, where the government goes up against you and fires the guns?
I'm not going to try legitimizing war crimes.
Okay.
It would have had to be, when you consider what Order 66 is, it would have had to be incredibly bad,
right.
We just didn't see that. I don't even know what that would be. I mean, that would be like a We Made Starkiller base level thing. And even then, you couldn't say everybody, could you?
Yeah.
The younglings, you certainly couldn't.
So with that, that's our time. We got to clean up, make room for the next panel. Thank you all for attending. Thank you to Claudia Gray.
All right, I am downstairs at booth 10101.